well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
Today, Lee and I are at Manuka Summerfest with the booth set up to talk about the Second Amendment with people that are walking by. And Josh Harris stopped by to talk to us. Josh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming out, Josh. It's a beautiful day out here.
Yes,
in Manuka. Lots of people coming by, and why don't you tell us about yourself and what's going on?
Well, I've been a local resident of Manuka, well, really the Will County, Grundy County area since I was born. I grew up in Shanahan and lived in Manuka now since 2004. I am currently a Grundy County board member, was elected in 2020, and I am also currently a delegate for the Republican convention that's going to be held in Milwaukee in middle of July.
No kidding.
Yes.
Great.
Interesting stuff.
You're the real deal.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Josh, let me ask you this, just to kind of kick off. What does the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution mean to you personally?
Well, to me personally, it means protection. It's the right of every American to own a weapon for not only personal safety, but national safety as well. I mean, the Founding Fathers put that in the Constitution, made it the Second Amendment for a reason, and that is to stand against tyranny from our own government. You know, people forget in history that, you know, every dictator from, you know, Hitler to Saddam Hussein instituted gun regulation and gun takeaway for the sole purpose of safety, but it's all about maintaining control over other people.
Yeah, yeah, I think confiscation is probably the word you were looking for. Yeah.
Under the guise of safety.
Right.
Correct.
I actually knew someone I had talked to many years ago who actually grew up during a time when Hitler came to power, and you know, he was preaching about we need to protect our people, so I need all your guns. And we all know what happened after that.
Right. So are when it comes to the Second Amendment, are you an absolutist? Do you believe in a certain amount of regulation?
Well, I do believe that people who do have mental illnesses shouldn't. I mean, we do a thorough check to make sure the wrong people don't get access to guns. But, I mean, but on the flip side of that, I mean, it's still easy to get a gun, no matter what. When Governor Pritzker passed the assault weapons ban here in Illinois, all he did was take it away from the law-abiding citizens. If you go down to South Side Chicago, you know, the gangs and all those who are, you know, shooting each other and killing each other on a regular basis, you will see the majority of them got their guns through illegal ways.
Right.
So that's really, I mean, you can pass all the gun legislation you want in Illinois, and Illinois being one of the most strict gun law regulation states in the union. But we have one of the highest gun rates, of, you know, crime gun rates throughout the whole 50 states. So they can pass any laws they want. It's still not going to change anything because the main reason is that they get their guns illegally, not legally, where most, you know, law-abiding citizens get it legally.
Right. So then passing those laws essentially harm individuals to be able to protect themselves, protect them, their family, protect their houses, while not having the intended impact.
Right.
Do you think that when J.B. Pritzker and his associates passed that law, do you think that they believe it was unconstitutional and passed it anyway, or do you genuinely think that they thought they were well within the confines of the law?
I don't believe when they passed that law, it was intended and looking in regards to the law. I believe it was done intend of party politics. You know, don't forget, you know, they seem to follow what's going on in their party at the national level. That's what I think it was. They didn't listen to the people of Illinois. You know, as you can see, you know, part of that law was to make every gun owner in Illinois register their guns.
Right.
There's like maybe 3 to 3.5 million gun owners in the state of Illinois, and barely none of them, and almost nobody, has registered their gun.
Yeah.
What are they going to do, arrest 3 million people?
I at one point, I was kind of keeping track of the what I'll call compliance rate. Last I looked, I want to say 6%, but it has been a while since I looked, so I'm not quite sure where that was. But the vast majority opted to not register or opted to remove their firearms from Illinois.
Right.
I'm sure plenty of residents have a second home in Indiana or Wisconsin or a relative, and knowing that this will eventually be overturned, temporarily place those firearms somewhere else.
Right, right. You know, they can, like I said before, they can regulate all they want, but, you know, it's like, I mean, I know the main goal of the Democratic Party is to try to eliminate guns, period. They don't want anyone right. to have even a simple pistol. They don't want anybody to have. But, you know, and it's all doing, like I said, it's all doing in the name of safety, you know, like, you know, try to prevent mass shootings. But personally, I think it's a, you know, to try to confiscate guns is a lazy way to try to solve the problem. It's like trying to cure a headache by cutting off the head. You know, you don't get into the mind. Let's, you know, like, I'll use an example. China, mm-hmm. which we all know, the Communist Party over there, they took away guns from all their citizens. So now they have a mass stabbing problem.
Right.
And so if you want to stop mass shootings in the United States, you got to get inside the head of what causes people to do that. And of course, each person has their own individual problem. You know, you can say it's mental illness, which I'm sure a lot of it is.
Right.
But you need to really dig to the root of why people do the crimes that they do. I mean, yeah, you could take away guns or, you know, dangerous weapons all you want, but that's still not going to stop people from doing harm to one another.
If the Democrats were able to remove all of the firearms,
mm-hmm.
then how does one protect themselves or a group from an
right.
attack with an axe or a machete
right.
or a knife?
Right.
Yeah, my view has long been that, that's essentially outsourcing what is an individual's responsibility.
Right.
And when you outsource your responsibility to someone else, everything that should be an individual responsibility that you give away to someone else to do for you takes away a little bit of your freedom.
Right.
And the more you do that, and you know, one of the most essential one is your, like you said, Josh, your protection, not only your own personal protection from crime, from assault, but also from a tyrannical government that is completely out of hand.
Right. You know, the other side seems to regulate, you know, when not just the gun issues, but, you know, let's take an example that happened the past 30 years, smoking. You know, it used to be you could smoke in public places, restaurants, the malls, you know, anything like that. Now we've regulated ourselves where you can't even, you know, you can't even smoke, I mean, out in public at times, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
What I'm trying to get
at. Make an argument of too much regulation?
Too much regulation, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm on the same page.
And then that's where they're trying to head with guns.
Okay.
But you know what, like I said, the Founding Fathers put that in there for a reason. You know, it's for our self-protection against, you know, Thomas Jefferson said one time that if a government becomes too radical, then it's up to the people to, you know, tear down that government and build new government to secure their future liberties. And, you know, when you have a party...
It's in the Declaration of Independence.
Right, and when you have a party that's constantly doing things that are not of the majority of the people where they live, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
And in fact, if I recall correctly, and Lee, you may be able to correct me, but I believe he even said it was the citizen's duty.
Yeah, he uses,
the, citizen's
he uses
duty.
The word duty.
No, I'm not advocating violence or anything like
that.
Duty. I mean, we need to regulate. You know, everything's. Oh, you know, violence. I mean, regulation through the. That's like a last necessity. If things don't work out, things get so bad. But you know.
I don't think anybody here is making the argument
right.
that government is a tyranny that you know that requires a force of arms.
But
what we're saying is that that's a safeguard against it.
Right, right. It's a safeguard against if our basic societal protections. You know, if you know society gets to a point where even the police are no longer around and we have complete civil society breaks down. Then what's the tool that people are going to use for survival? Let's say, when you know what I mean? Yeah, see, that's why we have that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think what we're advocating, what we are,
yeah.
and we're advocating, is to let's fix this on a political level.
Right.
Let's teach people, let's educate, let's advocate, and have the conversations with people to hopefully
right.
make some people understand what this is truly about, because...
Right.
The notion that the Second Amendment is there to protect your ability to hunt seems to be a popular tagline.
Right.
And that is 100% not why
right.
it was
right.
written in. If you consider what was going on at the time, what had recently happened, the Second Amendment was implemented it was written down to make sure society could protect itself if it ever needed to,
right,
against an overreaching right. government.
It's, you know, the people's view, the rifle, in basic terms, a rifle is a tool.
Sure.
And it's a tool we use for many things. Like, you know, well, they, like the other side saying hunting, they keep, like you're saying, they're making that argument. But it's a tool in case any, you know, for protection if anything goes bad. I mean, and it's a shame that some people, yes, who shouldn't have a rifle, use that tool, you know, for chaos, for mass shooting. Yep. Right.
I'm leery of the idea that you should give up essential human liberties or
right.
human rights based upon the misbehavior of other people.
Yeah, it's not like one person didn't ruin it for everybody. Yeah, that shouldn't happen.
Hey, Josh, I have a question for you.
Sure.
For people that, you know, part of what we try to do here is keep people educated.
Sure.
About not just the Second Amendment, personal protection, other things. I was just wondering, for someone who might not know, a listener who might not know, might not be involved with politics and are apolitical. On the board, like, what do you do, and how are there ways that you influence things like the Second
yep.
Amendment and
yep.
gun rights?
Yep.
Do you at that level? What's your interface? What do you do, if you can sum it up
right.
briefly?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because
sorry for the rambling.
Yeah, no problem. About 2 years ago, the county board made Grundy County a sanctuary county for gun owners.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, every time that, you know, Springfield passes these laws we don't like, you know, that and also like this big illegal immigration problem we're having.
Yes.
Like we made Grundy County a non-sanctuary county for illegals, so you can't bring your buses here. That's another thing we've done, and that also contributes to, again, safety. With all these illegals coming in, the citizens need their rifles and their guns more than ever. Because you don't know, because there's no filtering process down at the border. They just let anybody in, and you don't know where they're from or what they do or what their criminal background is, if they even have a criminal background.
And those kinds of, and with those, are those laws? Are they ordinances? Do you know what the term for that is at your level?
They're laws.
They're laws.
In Grundy County.
So you,
law ordinance, but they're supported by law enforcement.
Okay.
Because we've had several buses try to come in through here, and our Grundy County Sheriff's Office turned them around.
I'm glad that you took the time to explain that to listeners, because I think people, they look at big elections.
Uh-huh.
You know, you got a Donald Trump shirt on today.
Yes.
And people think about, you know, solving their problems at this much higher level.
Right.
And I don't disagree that that's important, but I think it's super important that they pay attention to these lower local elections, because they don't realize how much that actually impacts their daily lives.
Right.
I agree with that. And that vote, from, say, a percentage standpoint, is a bigger impact than on a federal level, because voter turnout as a rule is typically fairly low.
Right.
And every vote starts to make a bigger impact.
Right.
Voting at your local level for school board, for county board, mm-hmm. for city council, going to the polls in going to the election booth for those, I would argue, is as important or more important than, say, a presidential race.
Right. You're absolutely right, because, you know, within the past 2 years, the county board has had to deal with issues that normally are dealt with at a federal level, and the federal government, you know, our current president, he's not doing his job. And because he's not doing his job, we've had to take up these issues of how to do with illegal immigrants and then gun Second Amendment rights and so forth. You know, as you know, including our sheriff here, a lot when Pritzker and the Democrats passed that assault weapons ban, mm-hmm. we've had many sheriffs in many counties go against it
right.
and not support it, and many, even believe it or not, even some Democratic state's attorneys have went against it.
I've seen published letters
right.
from plenty of press conferences or press releases from sheriffs doing exactly that, saying I will not enforce this.
Right.
I have not seen an official letter from any Democrats. I have heard conversations where, off the record, they won't impose
right.
it, knowing that it's unconstitutional. I think one of the things one of the most concerning things to me right now in life as we move forward is how many people we've come into this country that are unvetted.
Yeah.
And for several reasons. One is that many of these people, they're getting gift cards. They're getting the ability to, you know, get a hotel, go, you know, buy a dinner and whatnot.
Right.
But that's going to run out.
Right.
And when those resources run out and that person is not working,
right,
how do they provide for their family?
Right.
Where do they get the meal? Where do they get money? What are they willing to do to provide for their family?
Right.
And then the second level is...
I would say, do you guys want to clarify, like, your views just on immigration in general? Do you guys...
Sure. But if you don't mind, I'll go first.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
I'm 100% for legal immigration. Without a doubt, I feel that is one of the strengths of this country. It is one of the draws of this country, and it makes this country different, and I will argue better than most other countries. I am against illegal immigration.
Right, because it's it's now gone to the point where it's a question of national security.
And that's my second point, is that besides the individual immigrants, illegal immigrants that maybe, you know, just wanted a better life.
Right.
There are people that intentionally want to harm this country.
Oh, I know.
And that is my second concern, that there are terrorists coming across this country, and not only do they not care about this country, they want to harm this country.
The 9/11 Commission, in their report, listed the fact that the majority of the hijackers on 9/11, if we had just followed our own immigration laws,
yeah,
we had just enforced them the way we were supposed to, would never have been allowed inside the country.
And it's amazing how we've gotten soft on that. I mean, 22 years after that happened. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'd like to make a very good point in regards to national security. And I recently watched a program, and I recently talked to a U.S. congressman. The big thing is China. The number one migrant that's now coming in the United States are from China. China, I believe, is strategically, they're preparing for war with us. And I believe strategically they are going to hit us within the United States. And here, let me tell you how they're going to do it. You see, as you know, they're buying up land all across the United States. And a lot of this land is bought right near U.S. military installations. Now, what they're doing is they're giving all these people over there, Chinese, they're giving them new identifications. And they're flying them into Argentina or one of the southern South American countries where you don't need to have a passport or visa to get in.
Their immigration standards are
coming
low.
Up here, and they're coming through the border, and they're each given an assignment about what they're supposed to do. Now, here's the thing. Here's why they're doing this. China has set the deadline to invade Taiwan by 2027. In every U.S. military scenario, it shows that we win a war against China with heavy losses. Here's what they didn't factor in. Problems, things that are going to happen here. They're going to be ready to hit us here in the United States when they invade Taiwan. When we go, because we have a treaty with Taiwan. So when we're fighting China over to secure Taiwan's independence, American citizen you're going to start to hear things about police stations being hit, power plants being hit, because all these migrants these Chinese migrants that are coming over, they have an assignment. They have a duty. I said, well, you go at this position at this time, your job is to make a homemade bomb and blow up this place. And so when we invade Taiwan and we go to war with the United States, that's how they're going to hit us. And the reason, I know a lot about history. You know, I got a degree in both political science and history, and that's how communists fight. They did the same thing in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive. And there's a lot of things that our people need to wake up to that. Because I tell you, the smart enemy always hits you where they think you're most safe. And that's what they're planning on doing. And with this, they're laughing at us. With this open border and Biden not doing, they want Biden to keep that border open.
Oh, sure.
For that very reason, because, it's what they're planning on doing is going to make 9/11 look like a 9/11 look like a picnic. They're going to hit us on a national level. And the fact that they're buying all this land near all these U.S. military bases, they even bought some land here in Illinois, north of us. But it's all part of a big master plan they're planning on doing. Because China not only wants to invade Taiwan, they want to be the dominant power, world power.
And sorry to cut you off, they've made no secret of that.
Right.
They've announced they have a schedule in place to try and achieve that goal.
Uh huh. you know, after the Cold War, when the Soviet Union collapsed, you know, we got the idea that, okay, capitalism won, communism failed. But, you know, now we've come to realize that now that communist system in China, they're using capitalism to gain communism, you know, to show that their way of governing works rather than our way of governing. So, you know, we still have to, in my retrospect, the Cold War is not over. It's just one country got knocked out of that, you know, got knocked out of that contest, you know, that contest of communism versus capitalism. And we need to, and I think one of the biggest problem is that doing all this economic business with China is our fault on our behalf, you know, sending all our jobs over there and all that. I mean, and they took advantage of that not for the idea of economic partnership with the United States, but to gain
part of their long game. That was part of their schedule,
And now they've used that economic gain to build their military and build their power. And we're going to I just hate to see what the future holds. I really do. I mean, how our next generation is going to deal with this, how we're going to deal with this. So when it comes to the Second Amendment, sorry about that. When it comes to the Second Amendment, you bet your hiney that I think all this talk about them wanting to ban guns and take away our rights is absolutely insane. Because when the time comes, every single person is going to be glad they never gave up their guns. Even the ones that are against it, they're going to wish they had a gun.
You guys realize that people will go, yeah, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Right. But I'm giving you these are the facts. This is what's happening. I mean, I get my intelligence from government intel. I mean, I'm not allowed to talk about it, but I know people. And I'm not going to say who, but I'm telling you, we need to prepare because there's things going on that the majority of the American public doesn't know what's going on.
I think at least some of the argument is compelling because we've already seen, you know, open source media reports of in cities where there's a large Chinese population that there's a sort of like a shadow government and there's even sort of like a Chinese police force in back of like sort of operating in the background.
Right.
And those are open source media, media reports, not fringe right wing or anything like that. Those reports are out there. And so if anyone's sort of trying to, you know, argue against the idea that China has designs on operating in our country, I think that those things, you know, they support what you're talking about here, I think.
You know, that those kind of tactics I'm talking about, they've done it in other wars. Like, for example, in 1962, China invaded invaded India, and they used some of those tactics. They got people; they had, you know, Chinese people over on their side, living there, and then they took measures in their own hands, and they did the same thing in Vietnam. They had Chinese people. You know, after the U.S. got out of Vietnam in 1975, there was the Chinese Vietnam War, which a lot of people would call Vietnam's Vietnam, where they lost about the same amount of soldiers as we did when we were fighting over there. And they had Chinese soldiers there, citizens, and they attacked them. They attacked North Vietnam. I'm just explaining that's the kind of tactics. They use sneaky tactics.
Yeah, as opposed to a traditional war.
Right.
Where, you know, we're bringing in battleships or fly planes.
Yeah.
And we do have some, you know, we have some problems because of the structure of our government. Our foreign policy can vary throughout the decades. It can be inconsistent. And so it allows a China that has been more seen the long game or has been playing the long game to play upon that weakness. There's a benefit to sort of our chaos. You know, it's sort of like that old phrase, you know, that the U.S. Army the U.S. military has handbooks, but you know, none of the officers read them or are compelled to follow them, and that's why we're a difficult military to fight. I don't know how much truth there is from my background, but for sure China does play upon that possible weakness, but it could also be a strength.
And that's an interesting concept because, Josh, you talk about China coming in, whether they're doing it through the government or shadow corporations and whatnot, and they're buying up property, farms, land, and whatnot. But a person like me believes in capitalist system.
Right.
With less, you know, I don't want regulation.
Right.
But then the flip side of that is we're not regulating who can buy that property.
Right, right.
And it's, you know, a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It's a conundrum.
Yeah, and it's hurting our farmers, too. You know, I seen a program where a farmer in the United States, his farm's been, I don't know exactly where it's at. It's not here now. It's somewhere out near Kansas area, kind of. He's like a fifth-generation farmer. Farm's been in his family for 100 years. He said, now all the property around him is all owned by China. He said he's losing money because the Chinese are over here competing. It's ridiculous. You know, people need to be, here's the thing. People need to be more patriotic and then more about chasing money business-wise. They need to stop and look at the whole big picture. You know, Americans for America, you know, like, you know, they sent all their companies overseas to all these countries. And, you know, and then, of course, Americans lose their jobs over here. But they need to all make a quick buck. To make a quick buck and a cheap buck. But we need to start, you know, and that's one of the many reasons why I supported Donald Trump. Because he said many times, Americans for Americans, if you're going to send your business overseas, then you're going to be tariffed. You're going to be taxed.
Yeah, somehow in our country, the word nationalist became, you know, a dirty word.
Yeah,
right.
It really did.
And it becomes, synonymous with sort of like, you know, sort of like a Nazi. I hate to bring up the word.
Right.
But you know, Mahatma Gandhi was a nationalist.
Right.
Right. He believed that India, right, one of the, you know, ostensibly one of the most peaceful men in modern times. He was a nationalist. He wanted India to serve the Indian people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like this, making it a dirty word that you're a nationalist and you think that a country should take care of its citizens first it's really ironic that has happened in our country.
Well, yeah, and I think a big part of that is that when I say America first, I mean it.
America first.
What I don't mean is the hell with everyone else.
Yeah.
I just mean...
That's a good point, Joe.
I just mean... worry about this country first. And I equate it to, if I can help my neighbor do something, I'm going to help my neighbor do something. I'm not going to go pay my neighbor's mortgage before I pay mine.
Right.
I have to take care of my house first. This country is our house. Let's take care of our house first and then help who we can.
Because the other, the other side's doing it. The countries we've just been talking about, they do it. They're national, you know. Regardless of what right or left or, you know, the capitalists or every country's going to be, you know, nationalist. They're going to be for their country.
Sure.
Put their country first.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that as long as we're doing it also. We as a country, as citizens, we need to worry, like you said, be a little bit more patriotic and be more concerned about our country before we worry about another country.
Even, way before the Vietnam War, we supported, you know, Ho Chi Minh, who is considered more of a nationalist than a communist, because of that reason, because he wanted this country to be independent. The United States supported that. Even he was a nationalist, regardless, because he understood I'm not supporting, of course, I don't support communism at all, but I'm just using him as an example of national, you know, you got to put your country first and your people first in order to, you know, in order to create a country. And it seems like the Biden administration, you know, and the Democratic Party is all about outsourcing and, you know, bringing everybody in and making a globalist. You know, they've always been, even Bill Clinton was a globalist. A lot of the economic policies he put forth there in his administration is now biting us, like especially with China.
When Trump reversed NAFTA.
Yeah, and that's what they don't like. I know NAFTA was one of the worst. I know a lot of people who are personally affected by NAFTA.
Yeah.
Really?
There's a couple industries, construction industry and manufacturing industry that played havoc.
That were hurt by NAFTA when it was enacted.
A lot of people I know went from the middle class to even the upper middle class to the lower class because of that deal.
Interesting.
It's ridiculous. I don't know what they were thinking, because I remember they put that right after the 92 election. They even had Al Gore, Ross Perot, and all them arguing it on CNN and talking about how bad it's going to be. But, of course, Gore was supporting it. But, Ross Perot said, you're making a mistake.
All right, so Josh, for our listeners out there who want to support you, who are in your, would you call it your district or your county?
Oh, yeah, the county.
How do they find you? How do they reach out to you?
Well, the Grundy County Republican, I'm a member of the Grundy County Republican Party, and also I'm a member of the Grundy County Board. The Grundy County Board has a website with a picture of all the board members. If you ever, we have big board meetings the second Tuesday of every month, and they're open to the public. So if anybody has any issues they want to talk about.
And where do you meet?
We moved at the administrative building in Grundy County, which is right near Morris. It's right on the same street as Morris High School.
Okay.
And so it's always at 6 o'clock. And if any, we have public,
Room for public commentary.
We have public commentary. Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a text right now from Chris Balcoma, who, as you know, is a Republican.
He's been on our show.
Republican candidate for the state senate.
What do you want people to know? That do you have an election coming up?
I don't run for the for Grundy County Board until 2026.
Okay.
But I do want to say, you know, I'm getting ready to go to the Republican convention here in July.
Yeah. What should people be paying attention to? What do you want people to know? What's your message?
Well. Well, stick to the message. Well, everybody knows Trump's general message in regards to what he believes in. You know, he's pro-Second Amendment. He's pro our part, a Republican Party, and all the issues we stand for. But I think this time around, this is very critical, particularly this election, because you know, I doing all the campaigning I did for Chris and for myself and everything, the general public is very angry. They're angry. They're mad. There's a lot of people I know who have been Democrats for 50 years, and they're voting Republican for the first time because they can't believe how bad it is. My grandmother, one of them. My grandmother was a big anti-Trump person. She used to ridicule him, and then now for the first time, she is voting for him. So you can't imagine if they won her over. I can't imagine. That just goes to show how many other people they've won over. And this is probably the last time she'll ever vote because she just turned 90.
Wow.
Yeah, and she's been a Democrat
her
whole life. Yeah, and she's gonna right before she go. She says she doesn't. She believe. I hate to say, but she says she's not gonna be around much longer because of her age and her health. But she's gonna for the very last time she's gonna vote. She's gonna vote Republican.
Wow.
I don't think she's alone in that boat.
Yeah, the last time she said she voted Republican was Eisenhower.
So your message right now that you want at the forefront of our listeners' minds is right. Get out to the polls and vote.
Get out to the polls and vote. I don't think it's a matter of a party anymore. It's a matter of common sense. It's a matter of it doesn't Democrat, Republican, Independent. You know, Trump he's not a politician, and that's why he ran, and that's why he was so popular the first time. The man says what he wants, and the reason he does that is because he is not controlled by other people's money. Because once you're a candidate and you have other people's money, you got to watch what you say. That's why he speaks for the people like he does, and he speaks common sense because he's not controlled by other people's money. And that's what's a sad problem about politics today is it can be all about money rather than the people's voice. So that's why that's kind of in a way I ran, because I ran with almost a zero budget. And so I don't have any money to be controlled by people to control me. So I speak what the people want. And that's what's good done, because we're supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And that, you probably, as you know, that gets missed so many times.
Yeah, the people that work in our government are our employees.
Right. They work for us. We don't work for them. And
in
that's
theory.
A big that's been a big misconception. And as you know, one of those parties has always been the, when they always, like the Democrat Party always enforce these laws, they're always giving us these regulations. That's not how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to give them regulations. That's why I've always been a big fan of term limits. And
I'm a big fan of term limits,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And I'm also a big fan of, now the President of the United States selects the Supreme Court justices. I think it should be up to the people to select a U.S. Supreme Court justice. And the reason I believe that, we support them, you know, we select our state court Supreme Justice at the state level. I believe if we selected our Supreme Court justices, we would never, ever have to worry about a liberal-packed court again, because the majority of the country is conservative.
That's an interesting perspective. I've never heard that from anyone.
You said the words I was just going to say. It's an interesting perspective, mm-hmm. and one that I've never considered.
Right.
And that's why I love doing this, because if everybody that's listening takes one idea away that they did not previously consider.
Right. Yeah, I just want to reinforce that our purpose here, really, the way we started this podcast, is for people to become more informed.
Right. They did.
And this conversation is certainly part of that.
Right.
How'd you wind up getting? How'd you get into politics? You're interested.
Well, ever since I was a kid, I always been interested in politics. And politics runs in my family. Four generations back, one of my great great grandfathers was a U.S. president, and actually, two of my great great grandfathers were U.S. president, the Adamses, John Quincy, And also, and I found this out until recently, one of my distant relatives, I'm a distant relative of the Reagans.
No kidding.
Well, one of my great grandmother's mother was cousins with Ronald Reagan's mother.
So you can't help.
Yeah, I know. I love. I didn't even know that. But,
it's embedded.
Yeah, it's embedded. And what? And I, you know, because of ancestry. You know, I'm a big Civil War reenactor, and you know, I got to have a Second Amendment. You know, I got to have a FOID card just to reenact, which is ridiculous. I got a replica of an 1861 Springfield musket, and we're the only state in the union where a reenactor's got to have a FOID card just to do a Civil War reenactment. It's ridiculous. But so going back, you know, like the Second Amendment, it's essential. It's essential to the people's national security. It's a natural right for our citizens to have. And when a government takes that away, any government takes that away, people are in trouble. So that's why this election coming up is one of the many reasons why it's so important, because Trump will secure those rights and so many other rights that that the other side just seems to want a natural right, you know, right as a citizen, they want to take away. And folks, you need to go out there and vote more than ever. Even in a primary election or whatever, you need to vote. Because this, especially in November, because it's crucial. I have no doubt that the other side is going to try to cheat. But if we get enough people out there to vote, that's so overwhelming, they won't be able to. So.
Gotcha.
Great. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, no problem.
Absolutely.
Joe, unless you have something else, I think that's a great way to.
Nice to meet you, gentlemen.
Well, likewise.
Thank you. Best of luck.
And I'm sure we'll meet again.
No, absolutely.
Thanks very much.